On this week's Radio Today programme podcast, lots to talk about as Trevor Dann is joined by Nick Pitts, David Hepworth and Chloe Straw for the May Roundtable discussion. Also, James Cridlin looks at the latest Midas research from Rajar. And in David Lloyd's Radio Moments later, Radio 4's Dawn Chorus, the launch of Rock Radio Manchester, memories of Mike Smith at Radio 1, Radio announces the end of World War II, and James Whale looks back at his comments that got him into trouble during the 2008 London mayoral election.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First, let's have a quick word with Radio Today's editor, Roy Martin, to find out what's been going on in radio this week, and a shortened week because of the bank holiday, and not a lot of radio news around this week, Roy.
It's been a little bit quiet, but that's always a good thing, it lets me get on with other things in life.
What's been going on this week? We've had a day with no Chris Evans on the Radio 2 Breakfast Show for a start. That was Thursday last week.
That's right. He turned up for work. He was ready to go on air, but then he must have had a phone call from obviously a family member that said the very sad news of his mum passing away. So he took the decision to leave, quite rightly. And the sports guy, your mate, took over the show.
Vassos, my mate. Well, he used to read the sports news on my show on Yorkshire Dales Radio about 20 years ago. So I don't
really claim to fame.
Calling my mate particularly. But yeah, Vassos, I thought he did all right, actually. Let's have a listen to him announcing the news just after 6:30 that Chris wasn't going to be on the show.
Good morning, everyone. Thursday morning, 6:36, the Chris Evans Breakfast Show on Radio 2. But Chris isn't here. This is Vassos. Chris has been here, in fact, but he had to go just before we came on air. And he's left me a little note to read out to you. Bear with me. This is a little bit difficult for me because we're talking about one of my best friends here. Good morning, everyone, says Chris. The reason I'm not with you today is because just before we came on air, my mum passed away and I needed to go straight back home to be with the family. But it's all okay. In fact, it's very okay. Mum needed to be at peace. Moreover, she deserved to be at peace. We've been ready for this for some time now, and as she has throughout her life, in death, she's brought us together. She was an incredible woman. Anyone who's ever met her will tell you that, and ultimately, there was no battle lost, only a life won every single day. I'll be back tomorrow, says Chris. If Mum had the first idea I might not have shown up today because of her, she'd have been furious.
So that was Vassos on Thursday morning. I thought he did a reasonable job, actually, for the couple of hours he was on for. Ken Bruce then took over at 8:30. Don't know whether you heard any of it, Roy.
I did. I heard him introduce himself at 9:30. That was quite good.
Ken, yes.
Thanks, Ken. Ken.
Ken was quite witty, making light of the fact he was on an hour extra. Obviously a sad situation, but it kind of reminds us in radio that these things happen, and do you have a backup plan for what happens if your breakfast presenter doesn't turn up at short notice or has to leave because of some circumstances like these? And I think Radio 2 did well to keep Vassos on, who is obviously familiar to audiences. Of course, they've got the problem of Vanessa, the early breakfast presenter, not being able to stay on because she goes to BBC London and is on there at 7:00. So in the olden days, used to happen when Chris Evans was on Radio 1 Breakfast, for example, your early breakfast show would stay on and hold the fort if the breakfast show didn't turn up. But it raises the question, obviously, with automation and things these days, I guess most places the play out would just keep going right through the morning, wouldn't it?
And I'm sure there's somebody somewhere, as there was, at Radio 2 at that time of day that was capable of doing a radio show.
Also this week, some more details announced about BBC Locals joining Local Radio Day this year.
Local Radio Day. This is like Cadbury having a Let's Eat Chocolate Day, isn't it? How good is Chocolate Today Day? It's a great thing. I love it. But it just seems to be they should just be doing it every day rather than doing extra on one day. Is that just me being cynical?
It is a little bit. It's a celebration, isn't it? It's a kind of celebration of everything they do all year round to say, aren't we great, supporting things in the local community.
And the diehard anoraks, of course, saying, well, local radio died many years ago, and how can they say they're on local radio when they're broadcast from 50 miles away? But let's not go down that route.
definitely not. BBC also announced this week its plans for the royal wedding coverage. Chris Evans is going to be live on a Saturday morning, doing 8 till 11.30. I think this change perhaps because Dermot O'Leary, who normally is on the Saturday breakfast, is hosting some of the TV coverage. And then Graham Norton's not on. It's going to be Alan Carr and Mel Sykes after them. A special pick of the pops. Radio 2 really going for it with the years 81 and 84. That's the years Meghan and Harry were born. And Zoe Ball will have royal wedding party tunes on her Saturday afternoon show. Radio 1 sending Scarlett Moffat there to be its royal correspondent. Most of the other networks are doing something as well. Radio 3 is Asian Network. It's got live reporters there. Radio 4 and 5 Live teaming up from 11.30 on the Saturday morning. So Danny Baker's not on. It's Nihal on instead. And then from half 11, Claire Balding anchors coverage across Radio 4 and 5 Live. And when Radio 4 then opts out, 5 Live will continue through into the afternoon. And they've pulled out all the big guns. There's going to be Jane Garvey there, Paddy O'Connell, Asma Mir, Rachel Burden, Julian Warwicker, and many, many more. So looks like the BBC, at least, are going all out for royal wedding coverage. You think audiences are going to lap that up? I don't know what commercial radio is doing.
I was going to say, we haven't heard about any commercial radio. Are they allowed? Are the BBC exclusive on this, or can anybody
I think a lot of it is just being in Windsor and soaking up the atmosphere. I think BBC Radio Berkshire are doing quite a lot on the royal wedding and royal-themed stuff in particular, obviously being in their patch. Haven't heard anything about any of the big kind of commercial networks. I'm sure stations like Heart, it's kind of key to their brand, isn't it? The kind of whole royal celebrity stuff. So I'm sure they will be doing something, but we've not been told that they're doing outside broadcasts from Windsor or anything.
Okay, Global and Bauer, now is your time. Send us a press release. Let us know what's going on for the big day. I'll be in a car, so I'll be tuning around. I'll be in the car most of the day.
Okay. Is it like a limousine?
Yeah, I wish. Now I'll be on my way to a family event. So, yeah, I'll be tuning around whilst it's going on, hopefully reporting back.
And Radio Audio Week is coming. It's next week. We're going to be there in London.
We are going to be at Radio Today Live and radiotodaylive.com. Everything you need to know about the Radio Festival, which is taking place on Tuesday. Me and you are going to be there doing our thing, along with Emma and Vinny and the rest of the crew. So we've got that covered for you next Tuesday, if you're not going yourself.
We will be on the podcast next week at the Radio Festival as well, from the British Library. Coverage, as Roy says, radiotodaylive.com, broadcastradio.com, and via Twitter at Radio Today Live. That's all happening at the British Library on Tuesday. Next, Trevor Dan is back with this month's Roundtable.
Thank you, Stu. Yes, we are back at Jazz FM for the May Roundtable. Let's meet our panel.
My name's Nick Pitts. I'm content director of Jazz FM, and also this year, for my sins, I'm the festival director of the Radio Festival.
My name's Chloe Straw. I'm head of content and production for We Are Grape. We're a production company that makes shows for places like BBC Radio 1, Spotify and Red Bull.
I'm David Hepworth, best-selling author. I think the hat I'm wearing on this particular occasion is I write a column for the Radio Times about radio.
You do. Well, thank you for dropping in the midst of your world tour.
Quite right.
Plugging very privileged. Your dodgy book. What's it called?
Uncommon People, The Rise and Fall of the Rockstar.
Actually, it's very good. Let us start, if we may, with Jazz FM, our hosts. And Nick, you did the Jazz FM Awards.
Yes.
No need to ask you what it was like last week, because you've made this little package.
Please welcome your hosts, Chris Phillips and Jez Nelson.
Good evening, good evening. Welcome, welcome. All of our live music tonight is under the musical directorship of the brilliant young keyboard player and band leader. Please welcome Mr. Ashley Henry. Our first award is for the vocalist of the year.
To announce the winner tonight, please welcome BBC journalist and presenter Mr. Clive Myrie.
By the way, it's great to be here and not have to talk about Amber Rudd.
And to announce the winner of the International Jazz Act of the Year, please welcome to the stage British saxophonist Soweto Kinch.
And the winner of International Jazz Act of the Year is Cecile McLaurin-Salvo.
Thank you. This is crazy.
She's kindly agreed to play for us tonight.
Find a quiet place inside where you.
Ladies and gentlemen, performing with Ashley Henry and the Jazz FM Awards House Band, the winner of the 2018 Breakthrough Act Award, Nubia Garcia.
So it gives me great pleasure to present the PRS for Music Gold Award 2018 to Pat Metheny.
I'd like to thank Jazz FM for their efforts in getting this music out there. While I resist thinking, yeah.
It's only Tito Jackson.
It gives me a great pleasure to present this Impact Award to Mr. George Benson, my friend.
It's time for another live performance. Would you please put your hand together for the Digital Initiative of the Year winner, Esperanza Spalding. To announce the winner of this award this evening, please welcome to the stage a British blues legend, Paul Jones.
And somebody said, would you do this?
It's quite nerve-wracking giving an award anyway, but to give an award to your mum is quite difficult.
The recipient of the PPL Lifetime Achievement Award 2018 is my mum, Dame Cleo Lane.
We have got something truly wonderful for you now, because we're honoured to say that Dame Cleo has agreed to sing us a song.
How glad a million laddies from millionaires to caddies would be.
Well, for all of us who weren't there, that was what it was like. How did it feel?
That's highlights. I mean, that's 90 minutes down into 2.5 minutes. It's fantastic. I mean, you know, let's go back 12 months. We had the Rolling Stones at the Jazz FM Awards, and the first thing people said afterwards, how are you going to top that? And it's one of those things that lives over you for 12 months. But I think we managed to pull it off because we went just totally in a different place. Dame Cleo Lane, 90 years of age, performing. At the end of the evening, it was totally kept secret and what have you, no one knew. So not only was she given her Lifetime Achievement Award by her daughter, Jackie Dankworth, who herself is an amazing performer, which was very emotional, then we surprised everyone with Cleo performing a piece of music. So at that, with Tito Jackson presented to George Benson, George Benson's going to be here in the summer at the Royal Albert Hall, and we're going to present his award to him on stage, and we're giving listeners the opportunity to join us for that and meet George Benson backstage. Pat Metheny flying over to receive his gold award, performances from an all-female lineup of performers.
So what do we learn, everybody, from the success of Jazz FM, which is a niche genre station?
Well, I suppose it's always people want to listen to something that isn't the pounding sound of the chart, I would imagine, you know, which is seems to me to be a commodity that's rather overprovided. You know, people know what they're getting with jazz, I suppose, and if you turn it on and you hear what you recognise as jazz, you'll be satisfied, I suppose.
I thought there were going to be more of these kind of niche stations. I was thinking about your world, Chloe.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of, I mean, there are in pirate radio, yeah, but there's not a lot of niche stations. Is that because it's all done by streaming?
Not necessarily. I was thinking about this in advance, and I think it's for very specifically underserved musical genres. There tend to be. So there's a load of rock stations, for example, particularly things like Kerrang Radio. And then if you think of the more, I guess, commercial stations, what KISS has done is they've kind of diversified, into kind of having KISSTRY and KISS FM. It's very widely danced. So I think people just pick out where the kind of big guns don't serve them, and then there's room for things to come up. So there are a few. I'm not sure why there's not more, to be honest, but
there probably should be.
Yeah.
Now, so you've managed to fit your awards into a schedule which also includes running this radio station and being the festival director for the radio festival.
Yeah.
Will it be any good this year?
I hope it is. I hope it's worth all the sleepless
nights. I'll tell you one thing, from having run it myself, nobody will say it was any good at the end. They'll always find something to complain about.
That's fine. Listen, that's life, isn't it? It happens at home.
So it's the British Library. It's next week.
The
15th. Pick out a couple of highlights for
us. A couple of highlights for you. Christian O'Connell is leaving Absolute at the end of next week, and he will be on stage talking about his career and the future for him as he goes off to Melbourne and Gold FM at the end of the week. So this will be one of his last public performances in the UK before he gets on that plane and flies over there. We've got what should be quite a raucous conversation between Julia Hartley-Brewer, Nigel Farage and Dotton from Radio 5 Live on phone-ins, and how in this world of social media and 140 characters or whatever it is these days, we've sort of moved beyond that now, and people actually want to be heard speaking. They want to say their mind, they want to do it in their way, and of course it's seen the kind of phone-in format sort of take a rise. You know, look at LBC and their audience figures and their perception these days. So that's going to be a fantastic one. Damian Collins MP is going to come on and talk about fake news and what it's doing to our freedom of speech. And we'll be launching 30 Under 30 on stage with Charlie Sloth, talking to Louis Timpany from Fix Radio, who was an alumni last year and runs this amazing radio station. Again, another niche station.
Anything that would attract you to turn up, Chloe?
It would usually. I'm very pregnant at the moment and I go on maternity leave next week.
I had noticed.
So
I'll let you off.
Not this year, but there are some brilliant things. I did like the having the Salford radio students there again. I'm always really keen. We do a lot of youth programming. Hearing from the future is always a huge thing for me. It sounds like they've got some great things lined up in terms of what they're going to talk about.
Well, the whole theme is about the future. It's very easy for us to talk about what we all do
exactly
in the future.
Yeah.
I have to thank Trevor for flagging this one up here.
I saw these students do this exact session at the Nations and Regions Conference in Salford. And I rang Nick up and said we should replicate this at the Radio Festival, because these are three very bright, very creative people who will not hold back. You know, they've got something to say about the industry that they don't think is welcoming enough for them.
In what way are they not welcomed?
You've got to come to the Radio Festival absolutely. On the 15th of the British Library to find out.
It's mainly about two things, actually, from their point of view. It's about portrayal. It's about how our teenagers and young people seen and talked about on the radio.
Oh, I see.
But it's also about accents, which I think is so interesting. That, you know, that you're from Wakefield, but nobody would ever know since you've come south. But you know what I mean? If you come from Wakefield now, you listen to the radio and you go, well, no one talks like me.
Well, if you came from Wakefield now, you would absolutely play up your accent like crazy, I would have thought. It would be an edge to get you noticed rather than, you know, mingling in with absolutely everybody else, you know. I was one of those people I was that generation who was taught how to talk slowly over a period of time by John Peel. John Peel, who came from Liverpool, went to public school, went to America, and then invented this kind of nasal, non-specific way, which now can be heard in every single group who's ever interviewed on any radio station anywhere. They all told her slightly kind of, I'm not impressed by anything at all, you know. It all went back to John Peel, you know. So John Peel was the kind of classic conduit for that change that took place at the time. Whereas nowadays you hear, you know, very kind of pronounced and kind of in-your-face accents in a way that you didn't in the past at all.
Are you interested in that kind of thing, Chloe? You know, when you're casting around for new talent for Radio 1 and 1 Extra, are you thinking we need to have them sound more kind of funky, more regional, more, I don't know what the words are?
I think I personally am more interested in diversity as a whole, which I think is a really interesting issue. So that's gender diversity or cultural diversity. Obviously, nations and regions diversity is a huge thing as well. Also kind of diversity of ideas. So I would never go, right, I need a Scottish person for that, it must be that. But I think it is very much about casting the net really wide. And I heard this phrase once, which always stuck with me, is kind of knowing where to fish. So not just fishing in the normal pools that you would, but actually thinking, how can we cast the net a lot wider? Because I kind of find with more diversity, you get better ideas, which is kind of the business that we're in, and that's what you want, really.
So. As an indie, do you think that the BBC, as a customer, is interested in box ticking? That you go in there with an idea and they say, oh, well, we were hoping for a black person, a disabled person, a female person, a Scottish person. Are you conscious of that?
No, I think, I mean, the BBC obviously has a very strong diversity policy, which I think is really important. I think the way they've kind of researched and looked into that is, I had a chat a year or two ago from the guy who oversees it, and I was really impressed the way they've sort of implemented it, and I think it's really important. And I think it's looking at kind of the spread of diversity across the UK and how you reflect that on the radio. And for me, that's absolutely right. You know, it's absolutely as it should be. I think there are good ways to do that and ways that are perhaps not so positive to do it. And I think it's all about doing it in the kind of most positive way that you can, really.
Dave, as a previewer for years at The Guardian and now a columnist for the Radio Times, you have to listen to more radio than you make. Are you aware of the BBC and others being more interested in creating diverse programmes than perhaps they were?
Oh, undoubtedly. Yeah, you notice that, yeah. I mean, all I learned years ago about, you know, pitching programmes at the BBC and other broadcasters, actually, is that all that matters is the title and the presenter. You know, it's the combination of the two together. That's 75% of the communication there. You know what I mean? For instance, there's been a Benjamin Zephaniah thing on Radio 4 recently. I've not heard it. My God, I've heard it trailed. Absolutely everywhere. Because clearly somebody's thinking, it's an opportunity to get an Afro-Caribbean voice in here, in what is not our normal, you know, not a normal stream at all. Yeah. So I think the BBC have always got this kind of upper middle class hang up that they think people who've got regional accents are somehow more real than people who aren't. And I know this from work, my example comes from absolutely millions of years ago. I used to work on Whistle Test with Mark Ellen, who comes from Fleet in Hampshire, and Andy Kershaw, who came from Rochdale in Lancashire. And Mark always used to feel that Andy was somehow more real than he was, because to most people turning on the television, he sounded like a character from Coronation Street.
It was ethnic, wasn't it?
It was sort of ethnic. But it's kind of ridiculous, you know what I mean? They all come from the same kind of backgrounds. They're just regional differences in the way your voice works.
Where are you from, Nick?
I'm from Surrey. I'm a Surrey boy. Well,
there you go.
Is that bad? Do I leave now? Shall I go now?
Thank goodness we've got a woman on the panel. Is it something, you know, when you're running a commercial outfit like Jazz FM, is it something that even bothers you at all?
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, we're always on the lookout. But the important thing for us is that the broadcasters that we have are knowledgeable in their field, and that's the most important part of our casting. But we have a massive musical diversity within the music itself that you hear day in, day out on the radio station, and we're really lucky there. You know, jazz is all intents and purposes a black music art form, and therefore we reflect that day in, day out. I go back to the awards the other day. The, you know, diversity there was fantastic, but when it comes to presenting, it's about the knowledge, it's about their understanding of the music and their passion for it.
Nick Pitts is here, so is Chloe Straw and Dave Hepworth. We're talking about radio and we'll be back after this.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
David Hepworth, I want to pick up something with you, which is the whole business of previewing.
Yeah.
How do you, as a previewer, and Miranda Sawyer and the other people who write about radio, how do you get access to programmes that we, the listeners, have not yet heard? How does that work?
Well, I mean, they come from the BBC, and they largely come from Radio 4 and Radio 3. I mean, there's hardly anything on, well, the occasional thing on Radio 2. There'll be hardly anything on Radio 1 that's available for preview at all. And Five Live Sport, it'd be pretty much the same thing.
So is that why most of you,
that's what they go
pretty
for,
much write about Radio 4?
That's what they
4.
Write about. But also, there is the fact that if you're going to preview a programme, you're not going to have a huge amount of space to do it. And most people who are going to read it are never going to hear the programme at all. And so, what do you wanted to do? You wanted to write about two things. You wanted to write about what the programme's about and how it does what it does. And the first bit is more important than the second bit, because the first bit is the bit that provides the something to write about. This is a story about a country where so-and-so goes on. You know, you can write about the country and then you write about how it does it. And I think radio people tend to not see that, actually, because that's the challenge of the previewer. You know, so they're looking for things that have got subject matter as much as anything else.
Chloe, does it bother you as a programme maker whether you get written about in The Guardian or The Radio Times or anywhere?
It's really nice when it happens, but I think because of the sort of radio that we generally make, I accept that it's not possible. So a lot of the shows that we do are live shows. They're very reactive. They're once a week. So we're working to a once a week deadline. So, for example, we'd never get a preview of Annie Mac on a Friday night at 7 p.m. to David, because it's happening at 7 p.m. on Friday night. We're there making it. So we made a documentary series last year with Annie Nightingale to celebrate 50 years of Radio 1, and it was all soundscapes. And that got some really lovely write-ups, and that was brilliant. But I kind of am at a stage where I accept that the sort of radio we do make, it's not possible to write about it. although I guess there are now more places to write about stuff, so it doesn't just have to be kind of in the papers or whatever. There's more blogs and things like that, which might be able to reflect the kind of slightly faster moving live weekly radio. It's lovely when it happens, but I kind of have accepted by now that the sort of radio we make can't often get written about.
Nick, I think a lot of people make radio shows and then think, oh God, it's going out tomorrow and I haven't sent any previews out.
I think sometimes it's it's going out tomorrow, I need to finish it.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I can't recall a time when we've ever had a preview. There's probably been two occasions where we've been that far in advance that we've been able to send it out. But again, it's sort of knowing where to send it to. We've had some great reviews off the back of these, and that's really beneficial to someone like us because it shows the diversity in our programming, that we are not just, you know, a disc jockey sitting in a studio playing some songs. We think about our music and we present it in a certain way. You know, we have a series of programs every evening, 6 till 7, that are specifically about certain areas of music, but they are topical and they're contemporary and therefore they're up to date. You know, Jazz Travels, Sarah Ward, she's been broadcasting on Jazz FM since, you know, inception in 1990, but it's not something we could get out there for preview, and that's like much of our content.
What would you say, Dave, to producers and programmers?
I would say, I mean, in terms of not knowing who to send it to, there aren't that many people who write about radio, preview radio. You can get them all in this room, you know,
An idea for a podcast.
They'll all be perfectly happy to be contacted. They're generally on social media or whatever, because they're tearing their hair out, because they're writing about the same stuff all the time, because that's what's available. The other thing that I should have mentioned, actually, that Radio 4, I think, do occasionally now, is they'll do little samplers of the programmes. They'll do rough edits that give an idea. It's a programme, it's not finished, it won't be finished for 2 weeks, but here's bits of it with the blurb. And that's very often enough to write about. And it as well as being slightly exciting. Because if you hear something incomplete, you will tend to hear... I'm giving you a trade secret.
I'm writing this down.
Trade secret. If you get to hear something incomplete, you tend to think it's better than it is. The music business worked on this forever. Get them in the studio, listen to an unmixed track, and they'll go away and say, so exciting.
Can't wait to hear the finished product.
Look, when everybody else has got it, they're not bothered at all. You know.
How would it work if Chloe was to send you...
not me.
Not you.
Oh, no, you've put your name out there now. You said you'll do it now.
But, you know, is it worth sending out a couple of clips from last week's show to say next week's will be this good?
Yeah, I think it's perfectly possible to do that. And I think also it's just writing about what it is that you're trying to do and avoiding the same verbiage that everybody uses. Everything I hear from the BBC is always everything's brilliant. No, it's not. It's kind of all right, you know what I mean?
Another hour of programming in which anything can happen and probably will.
Yeah. You know, so I think it's a matter of working out how to communicate. Yeah.
David Lloyd wrote a blog
about
LBC's election coverage, and he praised it, but he mainly wrote it because he wanted to say no one else will do this because they only listen to the BBC. Is there any truth in that?
Well, I think they'll do that for the reason that BBC provides loads of things for preview. And therefore, if you're turning around on Wednesday and you've got to produce 700 words by the following day, you'll tend to go and look for where you know you're going to find things. But generally, most previewers that I've met are constantly complaining that they don't get to know about stuff outside that normal little pool. Although, you see, the another thing that I would say in response to David's point, which I think is a perfectly valid point, is that it's a matter of working out what different media do well. For instance, most independent radio doesn't do much about books. Why? Because it doesn't work in the language of radio. Well, a lot of radio doesn't work in the language of print. So writing about what makes so-and-so a good presenter is a really hard job to do. It involves a great deal of subtlety, and you've really got to think about it very, very hard. Whereas writing 200 words about there's going to be a new programme dedicated to so-and-so is relatively simple to do, you know. That's one of the things that I think is always going to be the challenge. And, you know, things like what makes, you know, their election coverage good is a very hard thing to sum up.
We've done election coverage in the past here at Jazz FM. We do programmes that are about business. We have a daily business programme every morning, 6 till 6.30. Saturday, we have a 9 till 10 slot that is about what we call Jazz Shapers, which is about people, entrepreneurs. And it's putting a Jazz FM audience angle on these things. And we've done live versions of that in front of live audience at a theatre. And then we broadcast it on air. We've even done election coverage. We didn't do it on the locals, but the last two general elections, there have been so many of those. And we've done the swing-a-thon, as we like to call it, play loads of swing music and then get an update. So we put an angle on it. So there are other people out there besides the BBC doing this sort of thing and speech-based radio stations. It's a bit of a secret, really. I mean, it's something that, again, you know, it's one of those, it's live, it's not a previewable thing. It's nice for us to do. People here enjoy doing it because it's another string to their bow, and that's one of the things we enjoy.
Now that Audible want more,
yeah,
I'm going to call them programmes, they might not, and now that Spotify are buying in more audio programming, do you think that people who do previewing and reviewing of radio, Chloe, should just spread themselves a bit wider?
Yes, I mean, I think the point is that it's about people sending them in, isn't it, really, at this stage? I mean, is there, David, do you ever sort of just have a, you know, go onto iTunes and think, I'll just have a look at what podcasts are out there, or are you pretty much God, relying on what's being said?
Well, I was doing stuff for the Guardian previews. It was quite interesting with the Guardian, actually. They went from not wanting podcasts at all, you can't have a podcast, to we want two every week. So you got to. For about 2 years, I had to find two every week, which meant I'm the world expert on hearing a podcast once. Now, that's not the podcast relationship. The podcast relationship is you have a narrow repertoire that you go into very deeply, you know. And so I was casting around, and I think people are casting around also. I think your point about Jazz FM's coverage of the election is quite interesting, because in the world of podcasting, I think you've got to be brilliant to be noticed. And you've got to ask yourself, how many of the speech programmes coming from ILR are brilliant? Because that's what might get you noticed. Doing something outrageous, doing something nobody else is doing. I mean, even like this case from, was it BBC Radio Sheffield recently?
The Naked Podcast.
Naked,
yeah.
Podcast. Well, it got them noticed.
It did.
You know, it surfaced above the world of radio, didn't it?
We talked about it on the last round table, and we got a bit of Twitter pushback because we said we hadn't heard it. And so I was going to ask you all to listen to it, but then I forgot.
I've heard it.
So sorry about that, Kat.
Could you reenact it for us? For yeah.
I wrote about this, actually. I heard them plugging it on Jeremy Vine's show on Radio 2, where they finished off with an invitation to Jeremy Vines to be their first male, you know, interviewing. And they got a very dusty response.
Okay, now, we always want to find out what our panellists have been listening to. Chloe, I know you've got to go before we've possibly finished, so I'm going to come to you first. What have you been listening to?
So talking about podcasts, the main things that I listen to are podcasts, aside from kind of my work, which is obviously very music-based.
That's but because you're a modern person.
I am a modern person, there we go. But I think because, yeah, a lot of what we make and what I kind of listen to each week is music radio. It's to sort of relax. I tend to listen to more speech radio and podcasts. That's if I've not just put my headphones on the tube in utter silence so no one talks to me, which is the alternative. So the first one is called Layers, which is produced by a producer who I love called Lucy Dearlove. She's a freelance producer. It's presented by Stevie Mackenzie Smith and Anna Kinsella, and it's a style podcast. So I'm not necessarily sort of into fashion or anything like that, but it's nice to listen to something very different. I love it because it's independent, because I think often you'll cast around and think, what's the kind of new podcast that I can listen to? iTunes charts are great, but they're very dominated by a lot of the big guns, as a lot of stuff is. So this is great, and it's just these two people just having a chat. They've got really good chemistry, but they cover topics such as kind of power, routine, conviction. So it's about kind of talking about style and how that reflects all these different areas of their life.
I'm not sure that wearing certain clothes makes me necessarily feel powerful as an emotion, I guess. I think for me, power is more about my mood or what I'm doing at that time. And clothes, you know, well, I guess dressing up. I really like dressing up. I don't do it that often. But it's more likely to make me feel glamorous, maybe, than powerful.
Hmm.
But I quite like, I feel like there's some ambiguity around this topic. And I think that we've got, like, a lot of territory to mine.
Yeah, and as you said, it kind of comes into that idea of, like, roles and dressing up and also...
So that's layers. It just occurs to me, before we go back to Chloe's second choice, Dave, you and I have talked before about how so many of the best podcasts are just two people shooting the breeze.
Yes. I've come to the conclusion that the secret ingredient of successful podcasts, the thing that really draws people in, is they like people who seem to be friends. There's a warmth. And it's not the normal adversarial stuff that you hear on most radio, which is, I'm going to get two people to disagree about, is sunshine a good thing? No, it's a terrible thing. You know, yeah. Whereas the strongest podcasts, you listen to things like Pulse of America, you know, from the States or whatever, you listen. The Jeff Lloyd, Ed Miliband is a classic case of this, because it's a little bit odd couple, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And that kind of thing's going on absolutely everywhere. I think it's really important. And then one question I was going to ask Chloe, you're expecting, is this your first child?
It's my third.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, sorry. My eldest daughter has just had twins not long ago.
Oh, wow.
And she was telling me this weekend she started listening to podcasts because she's pushing them out or whatever. And also you're suddenly interested in a load of things you weren't interested in before, the whole business of child rearing, pregnancy and whatever.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if this is happening right across the market,
yeah.
Whether it's one of those things that changes people's habits, because media is all about habits. The only thing that matters.
Chloe.
Yeah, there's a huge, just to briefly touch on it, there's been an explosion in parenting podcasts, which I didn't want to kind of bore on about. But when I had my first kid kind of 5 years ago, there was nothing. And obviously as someone who works in audio, it's fascinating to see what's out there. And now, I mean, for parenting podcasts, the market is saturated and there are some absolutely brilliant ones out there.
Yeah.
And yeah, totally, when you're kind of doing night feeds and stuff like that, podcasts are the best. You don't kind of switch your brain on to watch telly, but they're really nice companions.
Let's have your second choice, Chloe.
So the second one is called The Guilty Feminist, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. So presented by Deborah Francis White, mainly in front of a live audience. Obviously, being a feminist can be quite serious at times, or it can be portrayed as being quite serious. And this podcast is just brilliant because it takes a comedic look at being a feminist, her and her guests just taking the mick out of themselves. But also looking at pretty serious topics. So things like, I think the most recent one was about repealing the Eighth, safety, identity, autonomy. But it's just very refreshing. I think within feminism, often it can feel like there's a lot of different camps, I guess. And this is just nice because it gives it a bit of a light-hearted touch while still being very relevant.
And it sounds like this.
I bought a handmade clutch bag from a craftswoman and I felt so good about myself. I felt like I was Gloria Steinem and the ghost of Maya Angelou was smiling down on me. For buying a handbag. I felt like, oh, I've done such a feminist act. What I did is I bought a clutch bag.
And, like, a clutch bag is the embodiment of anti-feminism in a way that, you know, women's clothes don't have pockets, so we have to hold a clutch bag, which is a very difficult, most difficult of all bags to hold, I would say.
It is, but I think it demonstrates to the patriarchy,
yeah.
Hey, this is tough, guys, put pockets on my clothes. So I think in a way it's an ostentatious pocket that you're demonstrating their privilege in your hand.
Let's go on to Nick's choices.
Well, I was going to mention Reasons to be Cheerful because Ed and Jeff are going to be recording that at the Radio Festival. And it'll be interesting to see how they do that, obviously with the limitations there of the slot and what have you, because it is one of those podcasts that does have quite a long duration. However, you mentioned that earlier on. I'm going to mention two things here. I'm going to mention one of them is something that's I've reacquainted myself with recently. One at the Arias last year, and it's the Frank Skinner podcast from Absolute Radio, which I have to say is the one that makes me laugh out loud on the train. When I want to escape, I want to get away, I want to lose myself, I put that on, and you have to hear the piece last week of him talking about meeting the Queen at her special birthday party at the Royal Albert Hall. And it's storytelling like that. You know, there's that whole thing about talk to your audience. These guys, the audience are involved, but they talk to themselves, and they do it in such a way you feel like you're part of it. The stories are fantastic. It's laugh a minute, it's well worth a listen.
So there's me, Ed Balls, and Harry Hill waiting in the wings.
Ed Balls gives me the bit of elbow in the ribs, and we look round, and the Queen and Prince Charles are standing literally right next to us, in the wings, in the dark. She said, "It's very dark." And Harry Hill said, "You need a torch, really." And I said, "You should have a torch bearer, shouldn't you?" And she said, "Yes, I should, really, shouldn't I?"
Excellent.
So they then wandered towards the stage. She's gone very, it's very narrow. So I thought, what's the wings? Ed Balls had gone on ahead. And we was ready to do the finale. And he started going, "Frank, Frank, come on." And she heard him and turned around and went, "Frank, hurry up." So I turned, the Queen's telling me to hurry up. I've never moved so fast in my life.
Wow.
It was literally a Royal Command performance.
It really was. Frank. Right. I mean, I'm sure she didn't know my name. She just copied it.
There's Frank Skinner on Absolute. Nick Pitts, another one from you.
I'm going to give a plug to something we've been doing. I mentioned earlier on Jazz Shapers, which is a partnership we have with a law firm called Mishkonda Ray, and we've started a new thing called New Sessions. These are topical podcasts that are about elements of business life that are going to be affected by law. So they're very kind of quick turnaround. And we've just done our first one. It's hosted by Paddy O'Connell. He's talking with a couple of Mishkonda Ray lawyers on GDPR. And it's one of those things that here we're listening to our podcast to find out the information that we need to know around this nightmare of a regulation change. And these are going to be, they're not going to be every week. They're going to be when something comes out that we talk with Mishkon about and go, this needs to be covered. We'll be putting up another podcast. It's well worth a listen because, you know, if you have a small business or a large business, these guys know what it's about and it will help you make a decision on what you need to do next.
And levels of trust in relation to what organisations are doing with their data is really quite low at the moment.
Trust is down. Data seems to be flogged all over the place. I mean, John, you're a professional in this field, but do you change the way you do things as a result of all the news we've been hearing?
I certainly do. I think it's interesting as well, Paddy, that you said about this being the biggest change since the internet came in. I think it's
thank
important
you, Nick Pitts. Dave.
I used to be a huge listener to The Media Show on Radio 4 because I used to think Steve Hewlett was the best person on the radio of any kind. He was a brilliant interviewer. And when he tragically died, I stopped listening to him. I thought, I can't bear, you know, this is like a member of the Beatles has gone. You will not replace this guy, you know. And so it just kind of dropped off my radar. And then the other day,
I couldn't disagree more. Anyway, carry on.
Okay. The other day, I happened to be listening to Start the Week, and I thought this presenter's good. And I just listened to the whole thing. They were talking about the death of democracy or whatever. And it's only afterwards I realised it's Amal Rajan, who is the new presenter of The Media Show.
And the BBC's media editor.
All right. Well, you know, some of us don't sit at home thinking about who the BBC...
Former editor of The Independent.
Former editor of The Independent. But come on, I could have been the former editor of The Independent. You know, he's fantastic presenter, I thought.
He really is, isn't he?
Really good, really knowledgeable, but wears it lightly. And sounds like he comes from a different generation. It's like he's younger.
Tooting, I think, is where he comes from.
Okay, well, whatever. I thought he was remarkable. So I shall, you know, I thought that Start of the Week was very good and I should go back to listen to The Media Show.
He made a really interesting programme, Amal Rajan, about cricket and how the balance of power, which used to be at the MCC, now rests fairly and squarely in India.
In the subcontinent.
And it was a terrific show because he used to play a bit of cricket, you know, school and stuff. So he felt for it and he's from the subcontinent. And he brought a bit of both of those to that show. Now, I agree with you. I think he's a real find on
the
radio.
Very good.
It's become commonplace to argue that we are living through a democratic recession. According to this argument, authoritarians are on the march. The institutions that upheld Western pluralism have decayed, and nativist thinking has reasserted itself. But much of this assumes the future will be like the past. What if we don't know what a post-democratic world actually looks like? And what if the apparent echoes of history we see today, from the 1930s or 1970s, for example, are irrelevant to us?
I listen to a lot of Radio 4 at home. When I'm making a coffee in the middle of the morning, I always turn on the radio. And I usually find I'm being lectured by somebody at Radio 4 about how I should make my life better.
As if they know.
Radio 4, Radio 4 has replaced the kind of the role in society that used to be played by the church. You know what I mean? You know that thing you like doing? Well, it's really bad and you should stop it straight away. You know? And I thought I'd had enough of this. And today when I was coming in to do this programme, I put on my phone at the bus stop and I found myself listening to a programme on Radio 4 about, which was called Should We Eat Plants? Oh, come on. For goodness sake.
That's peak Radio 4.
That's none more Radio 4.
Just a final thought then. We haven't got Chloe here anymore, but I want to draw your attention, Nick and Dave, to May the 19th. There are three events on that day. There is a royal wedding. There is a cup final. And there is the UK Podcast Awards. I'm wondering which is the most engaging of those three for you, Nick.
I have to say, I'm going to make very many enemies with myself now. I come from a very royalist family, and we were going to be having a big family shindig at my uncle's house, but that's not happening now. But I will be getting together with my mother, who loves, you know, wears the masks and all that crap. But I have to say, I will be watching the Twitter feed for the UK Podcast Awards. I couldn't care less about football. I know nothing about it apart from they go one way and they go the other way and they swap over at half time.
Well, that's something you've got in common with Dave, who's a Spurs fan.
It's interesting, the royal wedding. I'm completely agnostic about these things. You know, I'm not that bothered. But it strikes me that the royal family just gets reinvented every 30, 40 years. And this time, the kind of lens through which it's reinvented is celebrity. Mm. And so I expect my daughters to be more interested in it than I will be myself. Just because, you know, Meghan Markle and Harry and so forth. It's just interesting how it happens.
I agree with you about that. And I was thinking about the royal weddings of the 80s. And I don't think Radio 1 and Radio 2 and Radio 4 and Radio 5 Live and everybody else all did specials all day long. I'm absolutely sure that they didn't, in fact.
But don't you think that applies to everything nowadays? So the World Cup, everybody. Mm. Everybody has to feel that they're doing... Radio 3 will probably be doing the World Cup because we got to show that we're living in the same world as the rest of you.
I think that's probably true, isn't it?
Yeah, they seize upon anything topical, anything personality with a lot of personality. Yeah.
Whereas, in fact, if you were a programmer, you'd think, I don't want to take part in that because everyone else is doing it. So I will be the place where people who aren't interested in the royal wedding can escape to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it doesn't have to be the anti-royal wedding, you know. It doesn't have to.
Although that would be quite attractive programming.
Well, maybe to somebody.
There's an idea.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, free jazz royal wedding. Ornette Coleman serenades you through the quiet bits of the royal wedding.
For the full duration of the vows. Ornette Coleman. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Middle of the day.
This is programme workshopping of the highest.
Love it. Do this next time.
David Hepworth, thank you very much for coming. And Nick Pitts, thank you very much for being on here and for hosting us, as always.
Pleasure.
This has been the Radio Today Roundtable for May 2018. We'll have another one at the beginning of June. And in the meantime, it's goodbye from me, Trevor Dann, and hello again to Stuart Clarkson.
Yes, thank you very much, Trevor, and all your guests as well. David Lloyd's Radio Moments are still to come after this on the latest audio research.
At james.crid.land, on the Radio Today podcast, and in your favourite podcast app, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, the Midas Touch. Every quarter, Rajar, the UK's audio measurement company, releases a little piece of research called Midas. It probably stands for something, I don't know, but it's a robust piece of research that measures all kinds of interesting things. So here's the new Midas Spring 2018 study, which for Australians reading this means quarter one 2018. I get the feeling whenever I read Midas studies that they ask a lot more questions than they actually let us see. But here are a few interesting things that jumped out at me when I read it. Firstly, linear radio is not very popular on a smartphone. Out of all audio sources, live radio, they mean linear radio, is number 3 at 21%, and that's just beaten by digital tracks at 22%, that's my MP3 collection, and Spotify-like services
Well, they're at a whopping 39%. Now, I've argued for a while that on a highly interactive device such as a smartphone, an entirely uninteractive thing like a linear radio stream is unlikely to hold much interest. It's why stations like Capital in the UK or Kronehit in Austria offer a hybrid app which allows you to listen live but to skip the bits you don't like. Smart speakers, very big but not very. We're told that smart speakers are part of the future of radio, and that might be the case. 54% of all audio listening on them, says Midas, is to linear radio. 54%, so that's great news. Except in total, the amount of linear radio listened to on smart speakers is just 2.8%. The television or the mobile phone is almost four times more popular for listening to linear radio. Yes, radio gets its unfair share of listening on a smart speaker, but there are precious few around, and those that do exist aren't replacing radios anytime soon, it seems. Radio is a social experience for younger listeners. If you talk to 15 to 24s, only a third are listening to radio on their own. They're most likely to be listening with colleagues. And in comparison with all radio listeners, they're three times more likely to be listening to the radio with other members of their family. Podcasts aren't a social experience at all. The most popular pastime when listening to a podcast is simply listening to a podcast, relaxing and doing nothing much. People really listen to podcasts. They're far less of a multitasking experience than the radio is. And while 53% of people listen to the radio on their own, that figure rises to 88% of people who listen to podcasts on their own. And this points, I think, to justification why podcasts should be priced differently to radio advertising. They are, it seems, much more valuable. And podcasts are also stable through the day. Usage reaches a high at 8:15 a.m, but use of podcasts remains roughly constant right throughout the day until about 6:15 p.m. And then after an evening lull, again reaches similar figures at 10 o'clock at night, or as I call it, bedtime. It's a fascinating difference to radio, which starts very high, reaching a peak at 8:15. By 3:15, radio's halved in popularity, and by 8:15, it's halved again. Now, all this data challenges us. A lot of it tells us stuff that we could have guessed anyway. More still, though, comes as a surprise. Now, Radar could keep this stuff secret and only give it to the radio stations. It's to their credit that they don't, and regular as clockwork, publish it on their website. I'm unaware of any other radio research company that releases similar stuff so often, and I'd urge you to take a look. You'll find it at radar.co.uk. And you'll find my website at james.crid.land, where you can get my weekly newsletter, and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. Radio Moments,
David Lloyd. So-called slow radio is in just now, isn't it? Just reveling in a simple sound with minimal narrative. This week last year, Radio 4 had the Dawn Chorus live.
So, actually, Will, it sounds like it's going to be a very peaceful, tranquil and calm night, which is just what we want to hear bird sound. You've heard a bittern, so we sort of jumped ahead a little bit there, didn't we? But is there anything else you're particularly looking forward to hearing?
The cuckoo. I just love the sound of the cuckoo. And I'd like to hear a barn owl as well.
It's really quite pleasant here, isn't it? But there's definitely a sense of isolation, of being way out in the middle of a landscape which
bitten again.
Bitten. Oh, I don't know whether anybody caught that, but that was a bitten booming as well.
Silence is amazing. I mean, it really is, you know, having come from a metropolis, it's wonderful. It's the perfect place to hear things, if that makes sense.
I love that. So addictive, isn't it? Will Young there with Dawn Chorus live on Radio 4 this week last year. Happy 10th anniversary to Rock Radio in Manchester, licensed as Rock Talk, with the regulator of the view that the format might work, but no one else agreed.
Stand by for 106.1 Rock Radio.
Let me go around the table and introduce everyone.
Steve Berry.
But people used to knock on the door because they were convinced I was a drug dealer.
The Moose.
I was quite happy to use my real name, Ernie Dinglethwaite, but that was deemed inappropriate.
Mike Sweeney.
This would be a good idea for a radio station. It's amazing. It's a station that we've needed. It's been staring us in the eyes for about 15 years.
Rock radio launching 10 years ago this week. It later became Real XS. 1986 now, and Mike Smith takes over Radio 1 Breakfast.
It's the Mike Smith Breakfast Show.
Well, a bank holiday weekend approaches, and therefore a lot of people are thinking of going away just for the weekend because they've got, you know, 3 good days. And what's more, for Katrina Burbank, it's her first wedding anniversary this coming weekend. Smithy's indisputable rules of life. Jill Montague of Feltham wants to know, why is it that when you pull up at the petrol pumps on the forecourt of a filling station and you get out, there's 3 choices. There's 2-star, there's 3-star and there's 4-star and a lot of pumps. Why is it that going into the nozzle of the petrol pump, there's only 2 pipes?
Mike Smith, who took the helm of Radio 1 Breakfast this week 32 years ago, before the days of unleaded and diesel fuel and that lovely, more perfect delivery of the age. Mike is one of just 2 Radio 1 Breakfast show hosts who are no longer with us. On the 1st of May 1945, the BBC announced Hitler's suicide. 7 o'clock the following evening, programmes were interrupted with the news that the Germans had surrendered in Italy. But for some days, no one was quite sure what was happening. And then at 6 o'clock on Monday the 7th of May, the BBC told listeners that Prime Minister Churchill would not be broadcasting that night. But then at 7:40...
This is the BBC Home Service. We're interrupting programmes to make the following announcement. It is understood that in accordance with arrangements between the 3 great powers, an official announcement will be broadcast by the Prime Minister at 3 o'clock tomorrow, Tuesday afternoon, the 8th of May.
The following day, Churchill prepared to broadcast.
This is London. The Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Winston Churchill.
Yesterday morning at 2:41 a.m. at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl, the representative of the German High Command, and of Grand Admiral Dönitz.
Churchill on the BBC this week in 1945. And during the war, of course, TV closed and radio ruled, so the audiences to that historic broadcast will probably never be equaled. The BBC were ready for victory. They'd got 7 different programme schedules ready, 1 for whichever day of the week that victory happened to fall on. And then they launched into 10 days of celebration programming.
Advance Britannia. Long live the cause of freedom. God save the king.
It's 10 years this week since James Whale's famous TalkSport broadcast that landed him in hot water.
Well, it has to be...
You're not allowed to say.
Say what?
Who you should vote for.
What was I... How do you know what I was going to say?
Well, I know what you're going to say.
Boris Johnson. What?
Did you say something?
What? I didn't say anything.
Boris Johnson. Did you...
No, I didn't say anything. I'm not allowed to say who to vote for in the London mayoral elections. It's wrong.
Well, no, of course not.
Boris Johnson. Well, I mean, I hear that Gordon Brown
has...
Can you
hear something on the line?
Boris Johnson. No, not a thing, no.
There was a story, because Gordon Brown had come out and said he was going to support... No, it was just a news story, and I'm just being silly and flippant and said, well, we need somebody as big as Gordon Brown to support Boris, don't we? Who could that be? Ah, it must be me. I can't remember it, so anyway... And my then producer Ash, who still works with me, who can't say that on the air, man, and all that sort of thing. And it was, you know, and we all made mistakes, you know. Interestingly enough, there was only ever 1 complaint. And I spoke to some people at Ofcom that I knew, and I said, I've been sacked. He said, that'd be ridiculous. He said, we just want an apology on the air.
James Whale, who left TalkSport following that reference to the mayoral election this week in 2008. So, with Tony Della Hunter's remarkable commentary from Valley Parade for Pennine and IRN 33 years ago...
Don't rush! Don't push! Wait for the kiddies! People are coming round us! You can hear the heat, the smoke coming everywhere! We are going to have to disconnect very shortly!
Heart expanding on the former GMG stations 4 years ago...
Heart is coming with more music variety.
London's first radio station, 2LO, launching 96 years ago from the 7th floor of Marconi House on the Strand.
This is 2LO, the London station of the British Broadcasting Company calling. 2LO calling.
Bauer acquiring the Orion stations in the Midlands 2 years ago. And the death of cricket journalist Tony Kozier 2 years ago.
Garner on the way now to Broad, and Broad edges, he's out caught, a third slip by Harper.
The West Indies have won this match by 9 wickets.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thanks, David. And as always, to James, Roy, Trevor and guests Nick Pitts, David Hepworth and Chloe Straw on the Roundtable Discussion. Next week, we'll be at the Radio Festival 2018, WTF. What's the future?
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.